Welcome to Dialogue on Teaching, Wabash Center's podcast series. I am Nancy Lynn Westfield, director of the Wabash Center. Paul Utterback is our sound engineer. It is my pleasure to welcome to the conversation Dr. Kenyatta R. Gilbert. Dr. Gilbert is Dean at the School of Divinity and Professor of Homiletics with Howard University in Washington, D.C. Welcome, Dean Gilbert, to the conversation. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Dr. Westfield. It's my pleasure.
So you, for 17 years, teaching homiletics, enjoying teaching homiletics, figuring out how to teach homiletics, getting a stellar reputation, that's my part, getting a stellar reputation for teaching homiletics. And then you just recently accepted a position to be the dean of the Divinity School. So we want to know, what is the shift from the classroom to the administration like, and how is it going?
It is tremendously gratifying, but terrifying at the same time. How about that? It has been, I wouldn't say a steep learning curve, but because I've chaired committees, I've done other administrative work, not in such a sustained way, but I've sought to be a leader in whatever space I have occupied. And in this role, making that shift was sort of unique in that, you know, I'm coming from the faculty that I'm now leading, and they're having to get to know me in this way has been a bit of an adjustment, I think, for my colleagues. I think because I am actually the youngest person, I had been the youngest person on the faculty, and now I'm the youngest dean, as well as, you know, at Howard, and that creates opportunities for growth. It creates and has created an opportunity for me to bring a little more energy around the decanal role. I'm excited about the opportunities that are before us, but I'm also sobered by the fact that when you're at an institution where the resources are unevenly distributed, especially to schools like ours that are not revenue generating units in the university, it becomes all the more of a challenge because you don't thrive if you're not raising funds to support the your own institution. And so that will be the steepest learning curve for me because I'm not a fundraiser, if you will. I need a team, a development team to assist me in that way. I've been very blessed to know many people who know people and respect the work that I do and who celebrate the fact that I'm in this role. And so whatever fundraising that needs to happen, I think we'll be okay. And we'll probably be more than okay if I have the right sort of disposition toward opportunity. And if I'm clear on our mission, other folks, money follows mission. So if I'm wise and astute enough to read the culture and read the people that I know I need to be in relationship with, then I won't worry about that side of things. I think when you get into these sorts of roles, everyone thinks about benchmarks. Okay, what can you produce? And my question always is, and it has been, and it will continue to be, what are you willing to invest so that I can produce what you anticipate me producing? And I don't intend to die in this role. So
No dying in the role. No dying in the role.
So, you know, I needed to be very clear with persons who work with me that this is going to be a collaborative experience. Shared governance, transparent communication, good stewardship. Those are my three pieces that will anchor my tenure as a dean.
So a dean in an embedded school in a larger university would be a president in a standalone seminary. So I'm just trying to clarify the kind of role that you're playing, the kind of role that you've taken on. Mm-hmm. One of your, I'm going to put it this way, and I think I'm accurate, one of your great joys in teaching was your relationship with students, right? Mm-hmm. How, talk about the role of the dean mm-hmm. with students, right? So I hear you talking about funding and fundraising and those kinds of things, which is critically important, mm-hmm. but mission to me is student oriented, right? So how do you, as a dean, how do you think about students now? Mm-hmm.
So my students are extremely diverse in terms of generational sort of dynamics and demography. And to be quite honest, I've not done a good job of making that sort of space. In my mind, I'm setting up space so that I can be the dean that I want to be. But I can't focus on any one thing at the moment. But I'm realizing as well that all things will keep moving. And if I'm not intentional about spending that time listening to students, then I'm going to, I'm not going to make the kinds of connections where students who need to be able to trust the leadership, I'm not going to make those connections as well. And so one of the things that I'm doing just today is meeting with our students between our chapel service and their 7 o'clock classes. Students, you know, come from full-time jobs, and our chapel service starts at 5:30, ends at 6:30. And then they have introduced to me the idea of having an agape meal between those in that space. And so I just intend to go be there and just sit and listen and think about, you know, what some of their challenges are in the classroom, how they are navigating this fall. Some of them have hit roadblocks. Some of them, you know, with the change in season, might fall into more of a sort of depression episodes. And so I want to take some steps back from my administrative duties, knowing that they're going to always, always be there, and just spend a little time with my students, and just give them some better perspective of some of the challenges that they experience, but they're not necessarily privy to why they're experiencing certain challenges that that impact their learning, impact their scholarships and financial aid, all of that. I want to help them to understand that a little bit better.
So, but that's what I'm talking about. So I'm talking about, which I'm not surprised about, mm-hmm. that you would carve out time to go listen to students and think of that as part of your administrative duty in a very busy schedule. You know what I mean? That you have not left the people who are students behind, and that you are making space for the students to come to make sure the classrooms are humane places, satisfying places, places that are well prepared for them to be well prepared to leave the degree program. Mm-hmm. I guess not all administrations would take students into consideration. And to hear that you are even today sitting to listen to students makes absolute sense to me.
Wow. Well, thank you. Thank you for saying that. I would have valued that as a student. I think the community that sort of nurtured my spiritual formation in the academy was a little more sterile than sort of the culture here. There's a different kind of collegiality, but you know, among our students, that distinguishes us from historically white institutions, and that's beautiful to see too. And I want to be on the ground floor.
Do you think that the well-educated pastor is over?
I listened to three preachers recently who were seminary trained, but also prominent in the sense that they have an attractional care persona, and very apparent that they're disciplined in their preparation for preaching. And when I see that in a generation of folk who will continue, who have at least 10 to 15, maybe 20 years of ministry in front of them, full-time ministry in front of them, and I see that sort of discipline, that really encourages me, because there's a lot of junk out there and there's a lot of fluff, and folks are being satisfied with things that they hear that are simply what they want to hear, not what they need to hear. And so when I see people bringing scholarship to the pulpit, it encourages me. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's not new, right? So for me, Black preaching has always been, if not scholarship per se, certainly highly literate. I'm going to use that word, right? Certainly highly knowledgeable, certainly bringing know-how and our multiple versions of know-how into the preaching moment, into the teaching moment.
Right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think the delicate dance with it is some preachers are just amazing stylistically, performatively, and they could be educated preachers, but their theology may not be the theology that I affirm. At this point in my journey, because my rubric has changed in terms of what I find to be helpful to listeners. But I try to also create, again, this whole thing of space to see whether or not I don't have to pick one thing and say, they didn't say it the way that they should have said it. It sounds a little homophobic today. It sounds a little, you know, but does that invalidate the fact that the person had some truth telling to say that was not related to their own particular perspective on gender and inclusion and affirmation of the human? I wonder if in some of those spaces, are people really convinced or convicted by it? Or is that their final answer? Or have they not had sort of the exposures to sensitize them to the fact that other people, not everyone has to see it the way you see it, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, I try to make space for that. And our students, we try to be patient with them because they sit in all different. I mean, you have some conservative students here. And by conservative, I mean sort of heavy evangelical leaning and not. They have a particular view of what morality is. And then I have some really, really, really. I hate to use the word liberal because that does not capture what I'm seeking to say. But on the other end of things, and I think we're somewhere in the middle. We sort of, well, ATS defines us as a mainline school in terms of orientation, although a very significant amount of the population we serve are folks from evangelical traditions, denominational, non-denominational, you name it.
I know from a previous conversation that when you were a child, you wanted to be an architect. So I imagine that you still build things in your mind, right? So what are you building at Howard?
Beloved community.
Say more. Yeah, that's important. Say more.
Yeah, so I think we're moving toward that. We use the language and have used the language a bit in this environment, but I think you have to live it out in order to name it. And there are particular principles that are indicators that you are living into or toward beloved community. And I think those things center around peace, understanding, acceptance, belonging, loyalty, creating opportunities for people to speak their own in their own voice without censoring. I think it's important to note that common ground can be identified if you work enough and if you're open enough to hear from another's perspective. Another beautiful thing, and you didn't really ask this question, is sometimes beloved community is just about recognizing that what's already there, what's already in your midst. And one of the things that I discovered, and I've been on this faculty for 17 years, and one of the things that I discovered, though our faculty were 15 of us, we all come from a different space. I mean, literally, we're probably the most diverse faculty. We have a white scholar who is PCUSA. We have a Black scholar who is PCUSA. We have an Asian scholar who is PCUSA. We have a director of contextual theology who is PCUSA. We have three Baptists. We have a Methodist. We have an Anglican. We have a Seventh-day Adventist. We have an Islamic scholar. I mean, we have a Methodist scholar. We have a Church of God scholar. We have a Church of God in Christ scholar. So in terms of diversity, you can't get closer to beloved community than that if you're striving for it. If that's your goal. Difference is difference. It doesn't necessarily mean that folks are working in a cooperative way, which I think epitomizes the spirit of beloved community. How can we cooperate and live in peace together? That's why I think that there's so much opportunity here that folks in the wider culture need to know about Howard University School of Divinity.
Well, and I think cooperating and living in peace could be interpreted as a kind of passive gesture. Mm. And I don't hear you speaking passively as much as you're saying we are building toward, we are using creativity. There's opportunity here for change, for growth, for shift. And our diversity is an asset to that creativity. Our diversity will use to help us continue in these creative veins.
That's exactly what I'm saying. And again, I was formed and trained at a school that was Reformed tradition by and large, and a seminary, the flagship seminary of the Presbyterian Church. And so bringing that sort of formation into a divinity school environment, it's different, very different. And so I'm thankful, really. I really am thankful that a space has been created for me and hopefully others to where you get to think the thoughts that you think. And you're not under any denominational sort of, you're not signing contracts saying I will do this and I will do, you know, you're not bound in certain ways that other theological institutions, I think.
I also think, Dean, that you have a personal nobility, a personal integrity that has its own kind of charisma. And in mainline Protestant seminaries that across the landscape are having dramatic death episodes or are shifting to their demise, to bring someone on in leadership with nobility, with integrity, with a sense of creativity is to Howard's longevity, right? So I commend Howard for investing in you and your kind of leadership.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Thank you. Nobility. Oh man, that's huge.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for this conversation.
My pleasure.
To our listeners, the Wabash Center website is the place. Look on our website for details concerning our cohort groups, resources on teaching and the teaching life, our blogs, our journal on teaching, our syllabi collection, archives of all of our podcasts, as well as information on our consultants program. And our website also has information about our grants and proposal program. A special thanks to podcast producer Rachel Mills, and the music which frames our podcast is the original composition of Paul Myrie. Wabash Center for more than 28 years is exclusively funded by Lilly Endowment Incorporated. And we are out. How was that, Paul?